AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. We're fresh off of UFC Abu Dhabi, which I can without a doubt say was a complete 180 from UFC 318. On the prelims, we go 1-6 on predictions. I was actually kicking myself. I'm going, how am I so bad? We rounded off by going 5-0 on the main card to finish 500. 6-6 on our predictions. We are now 198-104 on the year. We are still on our quest to be plus 100 on predictions, but being plus 94. Isn't too bad. So on today's episode, we are going to be recapping all the action from UFC Abu Dhabi, what happened in each and every matchup, and what is next for the fighters and the company overall. We also have a bunch of new UFC fights to talk about with you today. I also have a new movie review of The Death of a Unicorn. Watched it with the girlfriend last night. Certainly have my thoughts on it if you're just looking for an hour 40 movie to watch in your house. Also going to talk about the updated SummerSlam card before we drop our predictions on the episode later in today's week, or later in the week, late in the next episode, later of the week, however you want to phrase it. The next episode we have, we'll be dropping our official SummerSlam predictions, and we are going to be grading on a scale of A, B, C, D, E, F, not E, F, just we're grading every single UFC pay-per-view that has happened this year so far, so we have a lot to do on today's episode. I don't think we're going to waste any more time with our introduction. Let's get right on into it with new UFC fights to talk about with you guys. And, you know, last time we talked, we'd gotten a bunch of new updates. All right, we had had title fights. We had had massive fights on pay-per-view cards. We had had fight nights being announced. But since then, we have had some very interesting ones being promised to us. So first up, UFC Rio de Janeiro going down October 11th, 2025 in Brazil. Heavyweight action as Vitor Petrino is back following his dominant win over, who is it, Austin Lane. Yes, he takes on Thomas the Train Peterson. Thomas Peterson back for his fifth UFC fight. Last time out, he lost to Shamil Gaziev, but hey, what are you going to do? He holds wins over Dontel Mays and Mohamed Usman. I think they're setting up Vitor Petrino to pick up some heavyweight wins before getting into the rankings with this one. But Vitor is from Brazil. Thomas is from Minnesota. Thomas, I would love to root for you, but Vitor, I think, is going to run through you. I'm just being honest. I think it's just my opinion, but UFC Rio gets a good heavyweight matchup. UFC Vancouver on October 15th has a women's flyweight bout as the number 2 ranked Manon Fiorot is back following her championship defeat to Valentina Shevchenko as she takes on Jasmine Jasu Devicius, who is ranked number 5 on a 6 fight winning streak. She's 8-2 in the company. She has been killing it, following up her massive win over Jessica Andrade. She's getting a big shot against Manon Fiorot, and you best bet if Jasmine wins this, a title shot is in her future. She'll be right behind Natalia Silva after this one. Manon, she'll have to work her way back, but starting here with a win against Jasmine would do numbers for her. This is an excellent fight and will most definitely be on the main card. I could even, dare I say, see co-main event vibes with this matchup. Here's one for you. I have no idea how this is happening. UFC Noche in San Antonio, Texas, middleweight division, Zachary the Savage Reese. So we love Zachary Reese. Dude killed Jose Medina, beat Julian Marquez, beat Dusko Todorovic. He is truly a savage, all right? He's taken on Cedric SD the Ripper Dumas. How is Cedric Dumas getting UFC fights? Okay, he's 3-3 in the UFC. Let's not even act like he's good. 10-3 professionally. Biggest career win is probably over Cody Brundage. And he has, okay, by the way, he has 13 UFC fights. Okay, he has over 10 arrests. He might even be up to 18 now. He was just arrested for like another DWI. I have no idea how he keeps getting fights. He must know Dana. He must have leverage over Dana White. Him and the Israeli government have beef on Dana White, and Cedric Dumas is their undercover agent from Florida. So I have no idea how this is still on here, but Zachary Reese is from Texas. Let's hope Zachary Reese absolutely mauls him. Other matchup for you. This one for UFC 320, sticking in the middleweight division. Ateba Gaudier is back, following his just destructive minute knockout of Robert Valentine at UFC 318, which was so entertaining to watch. Might have been one of my favorite knockouts on that card. Is back to take on Ozzy Diaz. And Ozzy Diaz kind of shocked everyone, beating DeJordan Santos. Ozzy Diaz, of course, has been knocked out by Joe Piper on the Contender Series. And you know what? He also does hold the win over Bevan Lewis, who used to fight in the UFC. He's 10-3 professionally. We'll see how Ozzy Diaz does, but I think Ateba Gaudier is getting another round one knockout. Me and Ateba, we were both born in 2002. Us boys got to stick together, even though he's from Cameroon and I myself am from Minnesota. So there's that. But I mean, amazing fight. Can't wait to see Ateba Gaudier back. And at UFC 320, nonetheless, October 4th should be fun. UFC 321, going back to Abu Dhabi, heavyweight bout as Hamdi Abdulhawab is back following his defeat to, I want to say, Muhammad Usman. Beat him? Didn't Muhammad Usman beat him last time they fought? He'll be taking on Chris Barnett. Chris Barnett is finally back. Beast Boy has just not been fighting for the longest amount of time since Kenny and Chuku injured him. And I don't know what to do with this one. You know, I love Chris Barnett, but you never know what you're going to get with Beast Boy. He's a lovable guy, but Hamdi always just kind of hangs in the pocket, you know, and he also has a 7-year, you know, age advantage in terms of Chris Barnett. Chris Barnett is pushing 40. Hamdi is in his early 30s. So we'll see what happens with this matchup, but I don't know. I'll be very curious to see what takes place, but Hamdi Abdulhawab, Chris Barnett, heavyweight action in Abu Dhabi. Another one for that UFC 321 pay-per-view card. This one's fantastic. Middleweight division, this very well could end up on the main card if we don't have a ton of ranked fighters. Ikram Alkhisarov is back following that massive knockout win over Andre Munoz. He was actually supposed to fight recently. I think Junior Park beat someone. Who did Junior Park beat? Was it Brad Tavares last time? I don't even know who the Iron Turtle beat last time he fought, but Ikram Alkhisarov had a fight booked against someone. It might have been Bruno Fajera, I think. Yeah, it was Bruno Fajera when Jax McVay took him on, but happy to see Ikram back. He's 16-2 professionally, 3-1 in the UFC. Only career losses, Hamza Chimaev and Robert Whitaker. Those are the only two guys who have beaten Ikram Alkhisarov. As for Jun Young, 9-3 in the company, 19-6 overall. He's been building himself a little win streak here. I'll be excited for this one. However, I do lean towards Ikram Alkhisarov. Second to last matchup to talk about with you with UFC Rio, October 11th. Caroline Kowalski back. Wow, can't believe it. 40 years old, still going at it. She'll be taking on Julia Pollastri, psycho. 1-2 in the UFC, does hold the win over Corey McKenna. This one should be rather a prelim matchup, but I will be rooting for Carolina. She's 9-9 in the UFC, 60-9 professionally. So if she wins this one, she'll be positive. If she loses, she'll have a negative UFC record, but this will be her 19th UFC fight. Incredible to see. Carolina, we'll be rooting for you. And finally, the last matchup we have to talk about you guys with, UFC 319 finally had its long-awaited co-main event announced. You know, Hamza Chimaev, DDP, what was going to be the co-main event? Was it going to be Paddy Pimblett, Justin Gaethje? Was it going to be Alexander Pantoa versus Joshua Van? Were they even going to give us Tom Aspinall, Cyril Gane early? No, it's Leron Murphy versus Aaron Pico. Yes, that is right. The number 6 ranked featherweight Leron the Miracle Murphy takes on the debuting Aaron Pico. Aaron Pico, of course, supposed to take on Mosvar Evlov. Mosvar gets hurt, so he will now take on Leron Murphy in a co-main event spot. This is a massive spot. I can't lie. It was so underwhelming when they revealed it on the broadcast. And first up, they didn't even announce it. They showed, here's your UFC 319 main card. Then let's highlight this one matchup. So we had already looked at it. We're like, wait, that's the big co-main event? Yeah. Yeah, this is the big co-main event. Now, Leron, 60-0 with a draw. He's undefeated, 8-0-1 in the UFC, coming off a big win over Dan Ige. Also had a main event win over Edson Barbosa. He has also beaten Josh Emmett. Really? Did Leron beat Josh Emmett? Oh my gosh, Leron Murphy did beat Josh Emmett in a main event, and I think that happened this year, if I'm not mistaken. I completely forgot about that, if I'm going to be honest. Wow, I completely forgot Leron beat Josh Emmett. But yeah, this is a massive shot. If Leron wins this, he's in title shot, area. But as for Aaron Pico, he's 13-4 professionally. Biggest win, I don't know anyone. He's coming over from Bellator, but he was supposed to fight Mosvar, who's ranked number 2. He actually might be ranked number 1 now, and now he's taking on number 6 guy. So clearly they're very high in Aaron Pico, but as I've seen with Patricio Pitbull, as I've seen with Patchy Mix, as I've seen with guys over and over, it's really tough to come over, especially when you're fighting top level guys. Leron Murphy, I do not see beating Edson Barbosa, Danny Gay, Josh Emmett, and then losing one fight like here to Aaron Pico. But Aaron, I mean, I'll be wishing him the best of luck. I don't know who I'm going to pick just yet, but right now I certainly lean towards Leron the Miracle Murphy. But rather an underwhelming announcement, I'll say. It was certainly underwhelming. But Leron, it's kind of hard to, you know, pick against him, I'll say that, because he's just been on such a tear. So we'll see what happens, but those are all your new UFC fights that have been officially announced. We always talk about official fights on here. There's some rumored ones like Alexander Pantoa, of course, Joshua Van, that's rumored to be taking place, JDM versus Makhachev. We're just waiting for a date. In terms of bigger title fights, lightweight division, no idea. I don't know. A lot of uncertainties in the UFC, but I'm sure we'll find out a bunch of stuff as we move along. I'll tell you what else I found out the other night, guys, and that is if you choose a random movie that pops up on HBO Max, sometimes it can be shockingly enjoyable. That's what happened last night when I watched the movie Death of a Unicorn. Now, I had seen a trailer for this movie a while ago, completely forgotten about it. I was like, you know what? I kind of want to see that. It looks like such a dumb, silly premise. I would watch this, and lo and behold, popped up last night. I needed a movie to watch. That is what me and the girlfriend watch. Now, it stars Jenna Ortega, Paul Rudd. You even got Will Poulter in there, and Tia Lanani. Tia Lanani, you would recognize her from stuff she's been in, but really the big three, Paul Rudd, Jenna Ortega, and Will Poulter. And the entire premise is, Paul Rudd, his character, he is a attorney or lawyer or whatever, and he's going out to this billionaire's big house, big ranch in the wilderness with his daughter, Jenna Ortega, to kind of show them how they interact and that he is primed to take over as someone who leads the board, if you will. And on their way, they run into this creature. They hit this creature as they're driving, and lo and behold, it is a unicorn. And Jenna Ortega touches the horn. She is transfixed on some magical thing. They put the unicorn in the back. They then move along. It then wakes up. Then the billionaire family sees it. They shoot it, and they realize that it is healing powers as it heals Will Poulter's father and Tia Lanani's husband in the film. I don't even remember who the actor was, some old guy. And he then is like, you know what? This is the cure to cancer. We need to capture other unicorns. And then the unicorns realize that their child or young one has been killed, or not actually killed, but has been killed at the moment. And they then go on a quest to get him back. And it's just hilarious. Is that these unicorn mystical creatures have like these sharp teeth and are blood hungry creatures when you come after them. It's honestly an enjoyable movie. If I'm being honest, you have no idea where it's leading, and the ending actually kind of leaves you kind of satisfied. 53% Rotten Tomatoes, 5.9 out of 10 on IMDb, 51% of Metacritic, and 68% of Google users said they liked this movie. I'll say it's a generous 6.8. 6.8 out of 10, a good 6.8, I'll say. Just goofy. Overall, I really like the unicorn aspect of the mythology. It's so dumb. Like, this is not a movie you could go in thinking like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a amazing, amazing movie. I'm so excited for this. No, you just kind of have to go in just with low expectations, if you will. And honestly, I thought it was rather fun. Rather funny. I mean, Paul Rudd, Jenna Ortega try to survive a unicorn, and it's an A24 film. You know, A24 is always putting out bangers. One of my favorite studios. Was able to watch it on HBO Max. I encourage you, if you have a little bit of time, to check it out. And it's just, the deaths are so funny. The deaths are so funny because it's just unicorns murdering people. They're like ripping them in half and their horns are just piercing them. And is it dumb? Yes. Is it silly? Yes. Is there any logic in this film? None whatsoever. But it kind of makes me wish unicorns were real. And it's the funniest thing is it's that Jenna Ortega is like explaining unicorn lore like it's just a common thing in this world. And you're like, no one has ever talked about unicorns in that aspect before. And I found that hilarious. And Will Poulter, I will say I've seen him play serious characters, but when he plays dumb characters, he plays them so well. It is so funny. Will Poulter is such a versatile, amazing actor. But Death of a Unicorn, I encourage you guys to check it out. It is stupidly fun. And yeah, we'll give it a 6.8 out of 10. But like I said, it's a good 6.8. out of 10. And I wonder what else I'll be giving ratings as the year moves along, especially when we get into the WWE Universe side of things. And we have SummerSlam coming up. And we've been talking about SummerSlam over the last few weeks here on the podcast. And I will say we have now a full night of events. You know, we have 6 matches on one night and 6 matches on another night. What more could we ask for? 12 fights. I think it's going to be it. I think that's going to do it for us. But night one, you're going to be getting Tiffany Stratton, Jade Cargill. I think that's pretty good. Randy Orton, Jelly Roll versus Drew McIntyre, Logan Paul. That's night one. Guthrie and CM Punk will be most likely the night one main event. I don't really see a world where Roman Reigns and Jey Uso take on Bron Breakker and Bron Serena in the main event, unless something massive happens. You also have the Judgment Day versus Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships. And you even have a singles match between Sami Zayn and Karrion Kross. I would love if on Monday Night Raw tomorrow night, because I'm recording this midday Sunday, the 27th, I would love to see them add a stipulation to that, just of any kind of stipulation. I mean, you can add any stipulation to it, but it kind of does need a stipulation. I would love maybe a chairs match. I would love maybe a strap match. I would love anything involving an object of some sort, something like that. But I think that would do wonders for that. Overall, if I could try and predict, just some quick predictions, I'm going to say, especially judging by how night two I think it's going to go, you're probably going to see all your title changes maybe happen on night one. That's just what I'm thinking. But also it's tricky because I kind of thought that all the matches on night two were not going to have title changes. And then here we are on night one. All the matches I did think were going to have title changes are on night one. So Tiffany and Jade, obviously I'm going to do my actual predictions next week. But I'm really high on Jade winning. The more I think about it, I don't know if they're going to pull the trigger, but they might. Orton and Jelly Roll versus Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. I just hope that Jelly Roll eats some heinous bumps from Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. But by the sound of it, Drew McIntyre isn't too loved. He's kind of high on Jelly Roll. He's being kind of generous to him. Guthrie and CM Punk got to be the night one main event. I would love to see CM Punk finally win the World Heavyweight Championship, but I'm going to tell you this right now. If CM Punk does not win the World Heavyweight Championship, then I think John Cena's losing the belt. I think they're going to have one of their major championships change hands. And if it's Seth Rollins, by the way, here's what I think. I think if CM Punk wins, then John Cena retains. But if CM Punk loses to Gunther, then you are going to see John Cena lose the championship. Now, on the other hand, if Seth Rollins cashes in any regard night one, I think John Cena is going to retain. That's just kind of my thoughts there. But CM Punk, Gunther, that should be a phenomenal night one main event. Judgment Day versus Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss. I think you've got to give the belt to Charlotte Flair and Alexa Bliss if you want to have any movement in the women's tag team division. If you have the Judgment Day regain in any regards, it's just not going to build them up. You know, Raquel Rodriguez and what's-her-face, Roxanne Perez, they just don't have that. They're not over with the fans enough. I don't think they can go far enough to really build up any animosity. But I would love to see Liv Morgan return and maybe distract them. That would be entertaining. Roman Reigns and Jey Uso versus Bron Breakker and Bronson Reed. Love this on night number one. I think they might even get involved in the night two main event. I'm torn because Roman Reigns and Jey Uso, I would love to see them win, but I really think Bron and Bron need to win this if you want to give them any form of heat of any kind, you know, any momentum, if you will, because right now they don't really have any. They participate on Raw matches. They occasionally win. They occasionally lose. Nothing's really going on. And as for Sami Zayn and Karrion Kross, I get the vibe they're going to have Sami Zayn win just because they don't want to pull the trigger on Karrion Kross. But I think every fan out there is going to be rooting for Karrion Kross. And by the way, Sami Zayn is a massive face in this. Karrion Kross is a massive heel. If Karrion Kross wins, they're going to cheer it. If Sami Zayn wins, they're going to boo. That's just how it's going to go. Now, on to night number two. Now, it's not officially announced, but on SmackDown, officially a match taking place is a six-pack TLC match for the WWE Tag Team Championships coming from SmackDown. And it's not officially announced for night one or two, but you can presume they're going to do six and six. If they do seven matches night one, five matches night two, that would be very interesting, but I think six and six is a good split. You have the champions, the Wyatt six. I think Dexter Lumis and Joe Gacy are going to represent them. Andrade and Rey Fenix. You have DIY, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. You have Fraxium, Axiom and Nathan Frazier. The Motor City Machine Guns and the Street Profits all going at it. And I have no idea. You know, you could give these belts to anyone, but I know this is just going to be a 10 out of 10 match. And I'm a little surprised that it's going to be happening on night two, but at the same time, I'm not, because I think it's going to steal the show. And if this happens on night one, you're going to be comparing this to everything on night two and going, oh, this is just nowhere near as good. I think even WWE realizes this is going to be phenomenal. I would love to see the titles change, but the Wyatt Six did just win them. So we'll have to see. Also on night two, Dominic Mysterio versus AJ Styles. I saw a lot of people saying AJ was going to win, but I think Dom just needs a big name like AJ Styles to really build himself up. He was just in AAA and received a massive pop for just a surprise appearance. Dominic Mysterio is so over, and I don't think you should have him lose to AJ here. Unless you do a Finn Balor heel turn, which I could see, but I don't know if they're going to pull that. Steel cage match for the United States Championship between Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. That's going down night two. I love that. I would really just like to see Solo retain. I think you can drag this feud out a little bit more. And if you want to get Jacob Fatu inserted into the WWE or World Heavyweight Championship picture, not having him just remain U.S. champion is the move to go. I think you need to have him just somehow come out of this feud on top, but meanwhile not necessarily having the United States Championship, which is then just a task that WWE will have to deal with. Women's Intercontinental Championship matchup, no DQ, no countout, last chance match. Becky Lynch, Lara Valkyra. If Lynch wins, Valkyra can no longer challenge for the title as long as Lynch is champion. It's funny, they have the stipulation, and then they have the stipulation when Lyra had it, and it was if Lynch loses, then she can never challenge for the belt again. They'd just be making up the most random things. So I think they might have Lyra Valkyra win, actually. I was high on Becky Lynch all week, but then Lyra Valkyra, you know, with the stipulation, I think you got to ever win. I really think you do. Unless you have a Bayley heel turn? I don't know. I think Bayley might turn heel. We'll have to see. That should be a phenomenal match. Then the triple threat match for the Women's World Championship, Naomi, Rhea Ripley, and Io Sky. That is also going to be phenomenal. The winner of this is probably taking on Steffi Van Kair. I say you just keep Naomi as champion. No sense in having her already drop the belt after losing. Rhea Ripley and Io Sky can go on and do their own thing. You could even have those two team up. You know, go after the women's tag team championship. I don't know, but Naomi retaining, I think, is a smart move. I think that's what you got to do there. Now, on to the main event of night two, the main event of everything overall, Cody Rhodes, John Cena, street fight for the Undisputed WWE Championship. Going to be amazing. Going to be amazing. You're going to see so many things take place in this matchup that you never thought would take place. There's going to be action and blood and tons of run-ins. You're going to see, I think, Seth Rollins and his faction get involved. I think you're going to see Sami Zayn. You're going to see Randy Orton. You might even see Jelly Roll come out and try to help Cody Rhodes. You might then have Logan Paul, Drew McIntyre get involved. This is going to be a mess. This is going to be phenomenal. It is going to shift what's going to take place the rest of the year, the final 5 months of the year. Who's going to be champion going into Clash of Pairs? Who's going to be champion going into Crown Jewel? And what is going to go down at Survivor Series? People are saying The Rock's going to appear. People are saying Brock Lesnar's going to appear. Don't have any of those expectations. Just expect a good old style street fight. Anything else that comes with will just be a plus. But WWE, I think, has redeemed themselves after this last week of programming for building some suspense for WrestleMania. But now, I can't lie, you do only have two shows, 12 matches, 1 week left to build everything up. It's quite the tall task. I think they can do it. It's going to be a fun time. But yes, on the next episode, I will give my official predictions for each matchup. But that is the current slate of WWE SummerSlam 2025. And I can say that it is currently the biggest SummerSlam they've had ever. I think everyone can kind of agree on that. So yeah, SummerSlam looking phenomenal. Cannot wait to watch that. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into something fun that I was thinking about doing for a while. You know, we love ranking things in there on the channel. We rank things all the time. And instead of ranking, I decided, why don't I give a grade? And I was thinking I could do champions. I might do that later on. I could do, you know, weight classes. I could do fight nights. And I finally elected, why don't I give a grade to every WWE pay-per-view that has happened this year? We recently had UFC 318, another UFC pay-per-view that has came and went. And we are now sitting at 10 pay-per-views, I believe, on the year. Or are we at 8? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We're at 8 pay-per-views on the year. So I'm going to go through all 8 from UFC 311 to UFC 318 and give them a grade based on how they were from A plus to A F, right? So without further ado, let's get right on into it. With our first one, UFC 311. UFC 311, I do have to say, it was such a phenomenal start to the year. I mean, I'll say it over and over. That main card, the UFC 311 main card, is 5 out of 5. It is perfect. You have Rainer Day Ritter taking on Kevin Holland. And little did we know how good Rainer Day Ritter was. You then have Halton Almeida and Sergey Spivak giving us an entertaining grappling TKO fest. Halton Almeida round 1 finish. You then have Jiří Procházka and Jamal Hill in a fight of the night contender. Jiří getting a round 3 knockout. And then Merab Umar, fight of the night. It might still be my favorite fight of the year. I still remember watching that just going, this is insane. Then the main event, Islam running through Renato Moicano. I mean, it's watching Islam Makhachev fight is such a treat. Now, as for the prelims, you did have Rayonier Barcelos destroying Peyton Talbot. That was a boring grappling match. Osmat Bekov and Bogdan Guskov both getting entertaining finishes. Elsewhere on there, you know, Taguir and Clayton Carpenter, not too bad. Marino Sopage dominating Ricky Tercios is always fun to see. Muin Gafurev kind of ending the undefeated streak of Ringo Nakamura wasn't, like, the most entertaining thing. Same with Ali Perez and Carol Rosa. Same with Grant Dawson and Diego Ferreira. But we rank the crowd. We rank the venue in Inglewood, California, that main card. It was so good. It's not an A. It's not an A, and it's not the best card of the year, but A-. I can confidently give it an A-. I'm not going to go any higher just because there were a lot of filler prelims, but the main card, I mean, a perfect, perfect main card. You can't get much better than that when every fight delivers in some regard. Next up, we had UFC 312, and this is going to be an automatic F for a lot of people. It is going to be an automatic F, but I'm actually not going to give it an F. Okay, I have UFC 312 at a D. That is right, okay? Because there is some things we can take away from this. First off, Quinlan Sakyag kicks off the card with a 19-second knockout. All right, amazing. Then Jonathan Mikhaf makes his amazing debut, you know, dominates Kevin Jussett. Somehow Kevin doesn't get finished. Then Rongzhu, Cody Steele, one of the most underrated fight of the nights of the entire year. Rongzhu and Cody Steele was so much fun to watch. I'm still not over it. I'm still not over how fun Rongzhu and Cody Steele was. That was phenomenal. Then the debut of Alexander Topira, I had fun watching him dominate Colby Thickneys. You know, I honestly had a good time watching that. Wang Kong demolishing Bruno Brazil. I'll say the only issue with that is that Herdot Fischinger was just nonsense. Just made really no sense. Tom Nolan, Vyacheslav Borshev, kind of boring. Just regular run-of-the-mill decision. Gabriel Santos submitting Jack Jenkins was just embarrassing. Just embarrassing for Jack Jenkins. And then the final prelim was, it was Gabriel Santos, Jack Jenkins. So prelims overall, much better than the main card. You get into the main card, Jake Matthews, Francisco Prado, run-of-the-mill decision. Then Jimmy Crew, Rodolfo Bellotto, very entertaining, but I mean, it's still a decision. It's also still Jimmy Crew getting a 10-8 in round one and then dropping the final two. Wasn't the best. And then the final highlight of the night was Talisson Teixeira just blitzing Justin Toffa. 6'7 man versus a 6-foot man. Didn't work out. Then we sit through 50 minutes of two title fights, just 2 5-rounders in a row. Zhang Weili, Tatiana Suarez, boring. Just as Duplessis, Sean Strickland, very boring. So I am going to give it a D. You know, I'm not going to be too critical, give it an F, because we did have 2 performance bonuses, we did have 3 finishes, and we did have a fight of the night that I absolutely love. So we can't be too mean on it. But yeah, UFC 312, easily the worst of the year, and I don't really see any other pay-per-view that is being worse than that. Next up, we had UFC 313, and this one only had 10 matchups on the card, a lot of cancellations. Prelims, we had 2 finishes on, no fight of the night. Joshua Van versus Ray Cicero is probably one of the more entertaining ones. Bruno Ferreira submitting Armin Petrosian with an armbar was cool, and Carlos Leal's TKO of Alex Morono was awesome. Crazy that we're going to be talking about Carlos Leal, actually, in just a moment, but prelims, nothing too much. We get into the main card, one of the knockouts of the year, you could say. Mauricio Ruffy, King Green, 2 minutes in, a spinning wheel kick. I mean, phenomenal. Phenomenal. It's up there for KO of the year. But then Amanda Lemos, Yasmin Lucindo killed any vibe of the card. It's Leah Amanda Lemos lands a takedown every round and just holds her there. I have no idea how the ref never stood it up. You know, who is the ref, actually, in this matchup? Let's hold him accountable. Keith Peterson, what are you doing? Keith Peterson, the king of stopping fights early, never stood these ladies up. Yasmin Lucindo landed 4 significant strikes in round 3. That's all she did. And you had a total of 12 minutes of grappling time combined between these two. Just boring. Killed the whole vibe of the card. And then Ignacio Bohomenez submits Jalen Turner. Gets us all going. Justin Gaethje, Alpha Fizzy, fight of the night. And then Magomed and Oxpera is just 5-round, just back and forth decision. So analyzing the card as a whole, I would, you know, I think some people might give it a D. But it just doesn't feel like a D card. You know, that's what I'm saying. We watched UFC 312, which was a D minus. You could give it an F, but this really wasn't a D. Okay, but I also can't really put it higher than a C, so it's going to get a C minus for me. You know, we had 2 performance bonuses. We had a fight of the night out of the 10 fights. Half of them were finishes. You know, we got to love that. But, I mean, besides that, there's nothing much more I can really do for this, honestly. It was actually my bad. Four of the 10 fights were finishes, so even worse. But yeah, UFC 313, it can get a C- for me. There were just not that many moments on this card. Then, let's get into it. UFC 314, yeah, A. It's the best card of the year. Okay, it's the best card of the year. By the way, it had the most pay-per-view fights we've had so far this year, and it was just amazing. It was amazing. We kick off the night, rear naked chokehold. We kick off after that amazing knockout of Marco Tulio over Chase Ongora. Then, Suzu Mardarji Mitropozo, a split decision, kind of, you know, didn't kill the vibe too much. But then, Michael Kajacek, round one knockout. Julian Arosa, round one finish. Chase Hooper, Jim Miller, oddly entertaining. Verna Jandidova, Jan Chonin, yeah, that sucked. We can acknowledge that sucked. Just grappling, all right? Boring, boring. But then, Dan Ige, Sean Woodson, the round three comeback. I mean, are you kidding me, Dan Ige? Are you kidding me? He almost did the same thing against Pitbull, too. Dan Ige loves making little round three comebacks. Getting to the main card, Dominic Reyes knocks out Nikita Krylov. Oh, man, yes. Then, Gene Silva, Bryce Mitchell, might be my favorite fight of the year. Gene Silva is so entertaining. Knocks down Bryce, submits him with a guillotine in round two. Absolute savage. Jair and Pitbull, all right, Jair and Patricio Pitbull killed the vibe. Okay, it drained the vibe. It sucked. Then they are called for a title shot, which everyone was booing. That wasn't it, okay? That is legit the only thing. That and JDW Jan Chonin are the only two fights that hold us back from an A+. Because after that, Paddy Pimblett, Michael Chandler, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Michael Chandler made it longer with every other opponent in the UFC and then can't make it that long with Paddy Pimblett. Yeah, Paddy Pimblett is freaking him. Absolutely love me. Pass a little Paddy Pimblett. That was such a great performance from him. Main event, Volkanovski, Diego Lopez. Fight of the night. Might be the best title fight I've seen this year. Oh my goodness. It was insane. Volk, you know, pounding on Lopez in round one. Wins round one. You're kind of like, dang, vintage Volk is here. And at the end of round two, when Lopez dropped him and he almost knocked him out, had the fight not been ended at the bell. Holy cow. Insane. Insane. UFC 314, I just have nothing but praise for this. Nothing but praise. Everything was put together nicely. Little did we know, Patricia Pitbull would not show up to fight Yair, and that was pretty much it. That's pretty much the only thing that holds us back from an A+. But other than that, out of the, 14 fights we had on this card, you had 8 finishes, which is just incredible. Incredible. So, UFC 314, phenomenal work. Absolutely love this. It gets an A. Following that, UFC 315. Now, UFC 315, it's a C+, but it's a solid C+. It's a solid C+. There is just, everything's too spread out here. Everything is just unnecessarily spread out here. So, we kick things off, minute knockout. Beksad over Brad Katona, amazing. Then, Daniel Santos, Jung Lee, boring, just 3-round decision. You know, competitive, you know, when I say boring, I don't actually mean boring, but just, you know, it's not memorable. I'll say not memorable, okay? Then, Marc-Andre Barriot knocks out Bruno Silva. That was entertaining. We then sit through 2 straight decisions, nothing to note about. Navajo Sterling runs through Ivan Erslang. Modestus Bukakis steals a split decision from Ryan Kulaba. We have that. Then, Jasmine Jesse DeVicious submits Jessica Andrade. Then, Mike Mallett knocks out Charles Racky. We head into the main card on a high note, and somehow, I have no idea how, Benoit Saint-Denis versus Kyle Prepolic was not that entertaining. Okay, by the way, only finish on the main card, a round 2 arm triangle of Benoit Saint-Denis versus Kyle Prepolic, but it's almost like someone is significantly better. It's like LeBron James versus Peyton Pritchard. Or if you know basketball, Peyton Pritchard is this like 6'1", white little point guard on the Celtics backup. And he's taking on this guy, LeBron James, who's an absolute GOAT, okay? And by the way, BSD is no LeBron, but in terms of a 1v1, it would be like LeBron just not giving it his all when he should be giving it his all. And that's what was going on here. BSD just wasn't pulling the trigger, wasn't really giving it his all, and he just got him out of there really slowly. It was just clearly skill level better. Then we sit through 4 straight decisions after that. Natalia Silva outboxes Alexa Grasso 30-27, sir. Amzabi is up on Jose Aldo, that always gets knocked out at the start of round one. Rallies is able to become one of the very few men to actually beat Jose Aldo, actually retired him with this. Then Valentin Shevchenko, Nemfiorot, it's a 48-47. It's competitive. It's just boring. It's just nothing memorable. It's just nothing to really take away from that. And then Antia squeaks away with another title defense. But then the main event, JDM Bilal, fight of the night. People are calling it fight of the year. I didn't see it. All right, I can't give any opinions on this. I sadly missed it. It was my graduation weekend when I kept looking on my phone. I would get laggy. So JDM, Bilal is what makes this a C+. Okay, ending the night with a fight of the night is how you rally a car. And by the way, JDM bringing a fight of the night out of Bilal Muhammad, that alone should give him a 50K performance bonus. But yeah, UFC 315, C+ for me. UFC 316 up next, going down in June in Newark, New Jersey. The crowd was really buzzing for this, and I'm going to give it a B. All right, I'm going to give this a B. I think it was pretty good. Kickoff the night, two decisions, all right, and then Ju Sang Yu delivers a unreal knockout, 28 seconds over Jekka Sargei, face plants him. Phenomenal. Then Wang Kong just keeps sneaking on here, absolutely obliterating her opponents and not finishing them. Wang, we got to work on that. Andreas Gustafsson goes wild mode over Chaos Williams. Waldo Cortez Acosta outboxes Sergey Spivak to a victory. Then Osmat Mirzakhanov knockout, Joshua Van knockout. Great way to end the prelims. The Joshua Van one was insane against Bruno Silva. That boy was going ballistic. Then Kevin Holland submits Vicente Luque with an anaconda choke. Great stuff there. Then we get into a drag, okay, and this is what holds this event back from an A. Mario Bautista Apache makes not boring. We can call it that, boring, not entertaining at all. 173 significant strikes for Mario, 122 for Apache Mix. I don't know if any of them were of damage. I don't know if any strike was actually significant in impairing their opponent. I generally don't think so. After that, Joe Pfeiffer, Calvin Gastelum. Joe almost had him out of there in round one, had a 10-8 over Kelvin, and then just goes through the next two rounds at distance striking. Not entertaining. But then our two title fights, both of them performance bonuses. Kayla Harrison runs through Julia Pena, submits her with a Kimura, 5 seconds left in round two. Amazing. New women's bantamweight champion. Then Merab obliterates Sean O'Malley. Oh my goodness, he just runs through him. The fight lasted 14 minutes and 42 seconds, and just domination from front to back for Merab. Outstrikes him on the feet. He outgrapples him on the ground. And in round number three, Sean didn't land a single significant strike. That's how dominant Merab was. I mean, Merab even wobbled him with some of his shots. Merab was on one that night at UFC 316. Easy B for me. The Joe Pfeiffer and Mario Bautista fights just is what kind of gives it that little B. He doesn't get it to an A. And also the prelims, some amazing prelim performances, but also a lot of just distance fights. So UFC 316, a nice B for me. Very solid. Then UFC 317, the International Fight Week event. You know it. You love it. It gets an A-. A-minus all day. The only thing holding it back from an A are just a couple of, you know, run-of-the-mill decisions. That's all I can really say about you. But other than that, A-minus, this was phenomenal. Prelims-wise, not too shabby. Gregor Rodriguez had a highlight reel knockout for Jack Hermanson. Jose Delgado knocked out Heider Mill in 26 seconds. Terrence McKinney had a 55-second guillotine choke. And Jacoby Smith ran through Nico Price as the biggest favorite in UFC history. Getting into the main card, Peyton Talbot, Felipe Lima, just nothing too entertaining, nothing too memorable. Benil Darius, phenomenal count, similar thing. But then Joshua Van Branderyval, yeah, fight of the year, probably. It is probably fight of the year. I mean, the first fight ever in UFC history, I think it was. Or at least, by the way, a three-round fight, both guys land over 200 significant strikes each. Oh, it was insane. It was insane. By the way, Joshua Van became the number one ranked contender at flyweight. He currently is at 23 years old. We're the same age for like 5 days. That is insane to me. Co-main event, Pantoa destroys Kai Kerfrans. I mean, we really need to find Pantoa a tough contender. Joshua Van, you best bring your A++ game when you get your title shot. And the main event, Topiro Oliveira, only lasted 2 minutes, 27 seconds. And it was a glorious 2 minutes and 27 seconds. The fact we got to see Ian Topiro versus Charles Oliveira in our lifetime is a blessing. Well, you know, people talk about seeing the solar eclipses. They talk about seeing the pyramids getting built. They talk about seeing all sorts of wars and stuff. Nah, I got to see Charles Oliveira versus Ian Topiro. Two of my favorite fighters. Yeah, that's what I got to see. But UFC 317, there is, you know, slim pickings to really pick at, but A- for me, very happy with it. Which brings us to our final pay-per-view we've currently had. It happened 2 weeks ago now at UFC 318 in Louisiana, and it's going to get a B for me. That's right, it's going to get a B, and the reason it gets a B and not an A is because our first six fights were all finishes, five in round one, and then every fight was a decision, and it just killed the vibe. Oh my goodness, but Kicking off the card, Carly Drew Dice, performance of the night, round three knockout. Amazing. Then Bruno Ferreira, 3.5 minute armbar. Then Ryan Spann, under 3 minute guillotine choke. Then Jimmy Crute, round one armbar. Then Islam Dulatov, round one knockout punch, performance bonus. Then Ateba Gaudier, minute 10 second knockout punch. Oh my goodness. Nikola Verkhneyov, Francisco Prado, entertaining split decision, not too bad. Your fight of the night, second last prelim, Brendan Allen, Marvin Vettori. Shocked that one fight of the night. I mean, first off, it wasn't the biggest best fight of the night, but also it was entertaining. So I can kind of see that. And also, Marvin Vettori's dealing with some issues. He lost his brother recently. I'm sure that 50K helps. Final prelim, Vinicius Oliveira dominates Kyler Phillips, but can't get the finish somehow, which was pretty shocking. Getting into the main card, Michael Johnson, Daniel Zaluber, run-in-the-mill decision. The OG vet, Michael Johnson, out gets him. Patricio Pitbull, Danny Ige. Pitbull grapples his way through the first two rounds, gets outstruck in round three, run-of-the-mill decision. Daniel Rodriguez coming on. The fact this didn't win fight of the night, you know, was really bugging me. Now, mind you, Max Holloway to Poirier, you would assume would get it, but the fact they didn't give it this, you know, if they had done Holloway and Poirier, I'd understand, but the fact they gave it to Allen Vettori instead of Rodriguez Holland makes no sense. Rodriguez and Holland, you should go back and rewatch it because it is utterly insane. Round one, 50-50, then round two, 10-8 Rodriguez, round three, 10-8 for Kevin Holland. Insane, insane matchup. Co-main event, Paulo Costa, Roman Kopylov, run-of-the-mill, Paulo Costa is scorching on Roman and then gasses out, and Roman just refuses to pour on the brakes to really put him out of there. And then Holloway, Poirier, everything is advertised, and we'll say the final two rounds were not as entertaining as the first three, but that's just me nitpicking. So UFC 318 will get a B for me. So overall, not too bad. Your grades on your report card through the first 8 pay-per-views of the year, A-, D, C-, A, C+, B, A-, B. So we've been pretty consistent since we got into the summer. And as UFC 319 will come along, UFC 320, UFC 321, I think the rest of the year is going to be in great shape. But yes, those are all your grades for every UFC pay-per-view that's taking place currently in 2025. And all I can say is that UFC 319 is looking to be very, very good. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, we'll waste no more time. We'll get into why most of you, if you're MMA fans, are here. And that is for your UFC Abu Dhabi recap and what is next for each and every one of the fighters here. So without ado, let's dive right on into it. Kicking off the card, we headed to the men's heavyweight division, where we had Martin Bude taking on Marcus Buchecka. And Martin Bude, currently ranked number 13, did pick up the unanimous decision victory, and it was a very lackluster decision in that, I'll say that. For a certain Bude, just, you know, had the edge in the striking. Buchecka was able to land one takedown in the second round to steal the second, but other than that, I mean, round one, 50-50, you know, I could have seen it going either way, but round three, Bude got it all done. 41-7 strikes to 24, 1-11 on takedowns for Buchecka, gets 5 minutes of control time. Bude had 2 minutes and 51 seconds of control time for himself. Yeah, very lackluster debut for Marcus Buchecka. He will fall to 5-2, and he had an amazing jiu-jitsu career outside the UFC. He's pretty much won every BJJ thing you can ever think of, but in terms of his UFC career, I don't really know what his ceiling is. You know, he kind of reminded me of Cron Gracie almost, where he was just very takedown heavy and that's all he had. So maybe Buchecka versus Walter Wachter is the next route we go, but yeah, pretty lackluster debut for Buchecka, and he does not pick up the victory. And the underdog, Bude, gets it done. He's currently ranked at number 13, and with Mick Parkin at 12, Shamil Gaziev at 11, at Tai Tuivasa at 10, I could see him moving up in the rankings all the way up to 10 per chance, but if not, he can just remain at 13. My prediction, they at least move him past Mick Parkin to number 12. Bude is currently on a 3-fight winning streak and somehow is 7-1. In the UFC, so what's next for Bude? I say we reward him to some extent. I mean, I don't really know how far he could go up. You know, there's still Rizvan Kuniev, Talshan Teixeira below him. There's also Mick Parkin, who I predict will be just below him, but if we did want to give him another shot, Sergey Spivak at 8 would be a great option. Dare I even say Derek Lewis versus Martin Bude. So Bude, he's going to remain relevant at heavyweight for Buchecka at 35. I don't know if it's going to cut it out for you here in the U.S. UFC. But yes, that's all for the heavyweight bout that kicked off the card. Following that, we had the single greatest performance, maybe, in a fight ever. I don't know, but Steven Wynn just set your UFC record for knockdowns in a fight. I kid you not. I kid you not, the most knockdowns ever landed in a UFC fight and ever landed in a round now belong to Steven Wynn, who landed 5 knockdowns in round 1 over Muhammad Yaha, and he landed another one in round number 2. And he also had a lot more that were just ruled as slips or falls, and overall, it ended at 6 knockdowns for Steven Wynn. And he busted Muhammad Yaha, silly. Oh my goodness, this was a nasty win. This was a nasty win for Steven Wynn, and 92 Sniven strikes 57, 108 Toll strikes to 60, defends all 4 takedown attempts from Muhammad Yaha. The fight is stopped after round 2 due to the just one of the nastiest eye injuries I've ever seen Yaha had been facing, and the fact this wasn't stopped after round 1, 2, and even after round 2 with the knockdowns just was, Jason Herzog was just not in the mood to stop a fight today, and it clearly showed. But Steven Wynn gets his 5th career knockout victory, 8th career finish, and he will improve to a record of 10-2. Good stuff for Steven Wynn. He also gets his first UFC victory. Good stuff. How about that? 1-1 now in the UFC with a fight of the night and a UFC record for most knockdowns ever landed. Phenomenal work from Steven Wynn. And I'm just excited to see this guy come back at featherweight. And you get a performance like this, you're going to be put on the map. I'm talking, I want to see Pat Sabatini fights. I want to see Andre Fili, Christian Rodriguez. I want to see all types of guys at featherweight that you would never think he'd be able to be taken on following the Jarno Ahrens fight. And I'm just excited to see what is next for Steven Wynn. So if I could think, you know, lower-ranked featherweight, he's 32, so it's not necessarily like he has much time left. And he also, he's not really ready for the rankings, per chance, but you do have a fight coming up between Kevin Vallejos and Danny Silva. It goes down next weekend, and I think the loser of that would be a perfect opportunity for Steven Wynn to showcase his abilities in the UFC. Now, as for Muhammad Yaha, honestly, the durability of Muhammad Yaha, we do have to give him some credit for. I do want to say that. The durability of him is, you know, clearly good, as he was never officially knocked out after being dropped 6 times. But 0-3 in the UFC, that'll do it for his time here. He's going to finish his run at 12-6, and yeah, very lackluster. 3 fights in 3 years, and he lost to Trevor Peak, Cal Fernandez, and most recently Steven Wynn. So Muhammad Yaha back to the UAE scene. And by the way, his nickname was the UAE Warrior because he was the best fighter the United Arab Emirates had to bring to the UFC. Clearly not impressive. No, that doesn't count as like Khamzat Chimaev, who identifies as being from the UAE. No, this was the actual first UFC fighter that the UAE said was of their standards and clearly wasn't. So Steven Wynn gets the first of the 2 performance bonuses of the night. Phenomenal work. Following that, light heavyweight action, Billy Alakana Ibowazan. What a disappointment. What a disappointment. I mean, just abysmal. Just abysmal for these guys. Billy Alakana, 35 Sniven strikes to 28 for Ibowazan. Gets the 30-27, 29-28 victory. I mean, cut both of these guys. Did nothing the entire fight. 10-8 Sniven strikes in round 1. 10-8 Sniven strikes in round 2. 15-12 in round 3. All in favor of Billy Alakana. No idea what was going on. And Ibowazan, who I thought was going to be an absolute killer this year, is now 0-2 in 2025. And honestly, I don't know what to do with him. I have no idea. And as for Billy, you know, he's 1-1. Only losses to Bogdan Guskov. That's aged pretty well. I don't know what to do with these guys. Light heavyweight division has tons of killers. We already knew that, but I just don't even know. I really don't know. Maybe for Billy Alakana, you know, I don't even have names to come to mind. Ivan Erslan is currently 0-2 in the company. Maybe Ivan Erslan versus potentially Ivan Erslan versus Ibowazan. Maybe we do something like that. And then we have Julius Walker versus someone. Julius Walker's taking on, I think, Rafael Sequeira. I wonder if that can take on Billy Alakana. But those are just random names I'm throwing out there as potential opponents. But this fight sucked. Nothing happened. And yeah, both these guys might be in danger of getting cut. Especially Ibowazan. Following that, women's strawweight action. And this was one of my sadder misses of the night. This is why I'm never, ever changing my predictions last minute. I'm just never doing this again. As Tabitha Ritchie not only defeats Amanda Ribas, but gets a TKO victory. Gets the 2nd TKO win of her career. Baby Shark, great work back in the win column. And hey, impressive stuff. She is now, you know, 3-1 in her last 4. She is 7-3 in the UFC, and her only losses are to Manon Fiora, Lupe Godinez, and Jan Chonin. That's crazy. That's actually pretty crazy. The number three at strawweight, the number two at flyweight, and the number 11 at flyweight. That's Agent Pretty, or strawweight, I should say, for Lupi Godinez. But Tabitha Ritchie beats Amanda Hevas here. Impressive. Impressive. Round one, Hevas was getting the better of her, landed a takedown. Tabitha Ritchie had some time on the clinch on the cage. But then round two, Tabitha put her up against the cage, was hitting her with nasty elbows, and eventually she just kind of like cracked her with one or two. And then Hevas just like was there for a moment and then just fell down. And little did we realize she like really messed up her face. She really messed up her face. It's really bad. Really, really bad. Yeah. Poor stuff for Amanda Hebus. She'll suffer her first ever defeat by getting finished in the UFC, and actually in a long time for Amanda Hebus. But lackluster performance for Hebus. Good stuff for Tabitha Ritchie. Sorry, I am getting just a ton of text messages right now. I'm gonna need to turn my phone. I'm not even gonna edit that out of there. You guys need to know what I deal with here while I'm trying to record these podcasts. But Hebus, yeah, 3-fight losing streak now. 1-4 in her last 5. I think that's probably it for Amanda Hebus. I don't really know what's left for her in the company. She's 31, but I don't really know. Amanda Hebus ranked at number, where even is Amanda Hebus in the rankings? Is she even in there? Amanda Hebus of 7. What? No way Amanda Hebus was 7. Tabitha Ritchie is going to go from 10 to 7. And what's next for her? How about Mackenzie Dern at 6? I think that would be a phenomenal fight. I really would. You also have Tatiana Suarez and Amanda Lemos doing battle. Maybe the loser of that. But yeah, very good stuff for Tabitha Ritchie. Her versus Mackenzie Dern would be a fantastic fight. If not, like I said, loser of Amanda Lemos and Tatiana Suarez would be phenomenal. If I could think of an opponent, if Amanda Lemos doesn't get cut, I have no idea. Loba Luke Boudmi or Denise Gomez. There you go. But yeah, good stuff for Tabitha Ritchie. Kind of sad they didn't give her a performance bonus for, you know, finally being a woman that gets a finish. Following that, bantamweight action, Davy Grant, Damon Blackshear. Oh, this one pissed me off, man. I was getting riled up on these prelims. I kept picking them all wrong. And oh my gosh, I love Damon Blackshear. And Davy Grant beats him. Davy Grant, you bastard. Damon Blackshear, 4 minutes control time in round one, even tried a submission. He was on one in round one. 10-9. Easy 10-9 for Damon. But then Davy kept it on the feet in round two. Outstrikes him 29-17. Same thing in round three, 34-13. And Davy Grant wins a 29-28 unanimous decision. How, Davy Grant? How, you bastard? You 39-year-old bastard winning all these matchups. 2-fight win streak now for Davy Grant. And I think it's safe to say that, you know, Davy Grant's been on an absolute killing spree. He really has. In this run since 2020, he has only ever lost to Marlon Vera, Adrian Yanez, and Daniel Marcos. By the way, he should not have lost the Daniel Marcos one. Probably shouldn't have lost Adrian Yanez one, and the Marlon Vera one was the fight of the night. So David Grant, been an absolute killer. Really has. And I saw MMA Theory throw out the name Cody Garbrandt. Yes. Cody Garbrandt, Davy Grant, make that fight. I absolutely love that. Please make that fight. I think that would be super entertaining. I really do. That would be a fantastic matchup. Let's run Davy Grant and Damon and just see who's the... Davy Grant and what's his face? Cody Garbrandt. I think that's the next matchup there. As for Damon Blackshear, you know, Davy Grant recently beat someone in December called Ramon Tavares. Ramon Tavares is young on the come up. And I'm going to be honest, I think that would be a fantastic fight right there. So Ramon Tavares versus Damon Blackshear. But Damon has so much potential, and I just think Adrian Yanez is just the veteran who whoops all the youngins. I just think that's the role he fits in to society. And good stuff for Davey, gets the victory. And yeah, fight versus Cody Garbrandt would be phenomenal next. After that, we had our second and final performance bonus, although I think we should have given out one more, but Muslim Salikov, Carlos Leal, 42-second knockout for the King of Kung Fu, Muslim Salikov. How does he do it? How does Muslim Salikov keep getting away with this? He gets his 14th career knockout, his 17th career finish. This dude's a legend. Dude's honestly a legend, and by the way, last two fights, both round one performance of the night, knockouts, crazy stuff. Muslim is on a 3-fight winning streak now, and Carlos Leal, tough loss. Tough loss here, just got caught right on the, just hit him perfectly, and Carlos Leal's hands was down, the chin was wide open, and that was that. Carlos Leal, this is actually going to be the first time I think he's been finished in his entire career. I don't know if that's actually true, but according to my notes, I don't think he's been finished before in a long time. And as for Salikov, 41 years old, getting it done. I mean, I think I saw some Russians in the crowd. I think it might have been Islam. I don't even know, but they were going crazy. They were cheering for Muslim. Good stuff for Salikov. But what do we do next with Muslim Salikov? I think there's only one name that Muslim Salikov should be taking on, and it's Kevin Holland. Yes. Kevin Holland looking to bounce back from the Danny Rodriguez loss. Let's do that matchup. Or Or might I say, another even better option, how about Muslim Salikov versus none other than the man who just beat Kevin Holland, who's now ranked at welterweight, Daniel Rodriguez. I think that's a perfect option right there. So Kevin Holland, if you want to keep him unranked, Daniel Rodriguez, if you want to keep him ranked. And as for Carlos Leal, I think kind of an interesting spot for him. You know, he's 1-2 in the company. He's 31. I think, you know, getting knocked out like this isn't pretty, but you can certainly bounce back from it. Certainly names like Santiago Ponzinibbio come to mind for Carlos Leal, and I think that's what I'll recommend. Santiago Ponzinibbio as a next option for Carlos Leal. Another name, Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland versus any unranked welterweight. Let's make those matchups happen. With that, we got into the final prelim of the night, and I did it. I did it again. I did it with Tabitha, and I switched from Bryce to Saeed on the prediction show, and I paid for it. But I kid you not. I kid you not. Saeed almost knocked out Bryce Mitchell with a nasty knee in round one. Oh, man. I was going crazy. I was like, there's no way. Oh, my gosh. He's stunning him. But Bryce recovered, ate it, and grappled his way. Literally just held Saeed down. Oh, it's kind of killing me. It was kind of killing me. 9 minutes and 44 seconds of control time for Bryce in this fight. 3 minutes and 13 for Saeed. So that's right. Almost 13 of the 15 minutes in this fight, just off by 3 seconds, was in control time on the ground. Bryce, 13 submission strikes. Saeed, 20 and a knockdown. 30 total strikes for Bryce. 100 total for Saeed. 3 of 9 takedowns for Bryce. But rounds 2 and 3, he had 4 minutes of control time just laid on him. And look, I don't think Bryce is going to go far. But he did beat Saeed just from holding them down. And someone suggested the name Peyton Talbot. I think it's perfect. I think Peyton Talbot is a perfect opponent for Bryce Mitchell to take on. I mean, good stuff. But Bryce sharing the gospel, despite his just outlandish behaviors in Saudi Arabia, was pretty nice to see. So Bryce, he's been win-loss since 2022. Actually, since he suffered his first defeat, he's been win-loss. But good stuff for him here. As for Saeed, you know, dude is just so unlucky. Dude, he's 1-3, but I swear all of his fights, he's just been close. So let's get a bounce-back fight going for Saeed Nurmagomedov. I'd even say Saeed Nurmagomedov versus Damon Blackshear. I would actually really love that match if we want to matchmake on the same card. But if we're not going to give Bryce Mitchell, maybe Peyton Talbot, if we want to give him someone more of a veteran, I would even throw Cody Garbrandt's name out there. I just want entertaining fights. And if we do want to get him into the rankings, you have Montel Jackson, you have Kyler Phillips, you even have someone who we're going to talk about in a bit, Marcus McGee. There are fights to be had for Bryce Mitchell, and getting a win here, good stuff for the kid. After that, we dove into the main card. This is where my luck started to turn around as I went 5-0 on predictions. And we kick things off with Bogdan Guskov and Nikita Krylov. And Bogdan, man, I gotta give it to him. This dude, I never thought he'd be this good after his debut against Nikita Krylov. I'm yet to not pick him. I picked him in every single UFC fight so far. But after the Volkan Ozdemir debut, I was like, this guy just, he doesn't have it. He doesn't have it, but then knocks out Zach Pauga, knocks out Ryan Smith, submits Billy Alakana, and the round one knockout here of Nikita Krylov was just phenomenal. They're kind of dancing around. You know, round one, it was like 20 submission strikes, 16, and then Bogdan just unleashes a right. Nikita got too comfortable, gets clipped, goes down, bit of ground and pound, and I thought Nikita was going to survive it at first, but eventually went down on his back, was eating shots. That was that. Bogdan Guskov gets his 15th career knockout and 18th career finish. He improves to a very stellar 18-3. Oh my gosh, 100% finish ratio. I forgot Bogdan has a 100% finish ratio. And now he's 4-1 in the UFC on a 4-fight finish streak. And I believe he's tied for second in terms of longest finish streak. Steve Garcia was in first, but now I can't really remember who's in first. But excellent win for Bogdan Guskov. He was currently ranked at number 13, just knocked out the number 10 guy. How about that? Look at Volkan Ozdemir. Volkan Ozdemir is at 9. Bogdan Guskov, after losing to him his debut, is now already back there at 10. So what should be next for Bogdan? Well, it's fighting up. That's for certain. We do have a number of matchups taking place which are going to determine the trajectory of this division. Of course, we have Alexander Rakic and Azamat Mirzakhanov. You also have Zhang Mingyang and Johnny Walker. If we want to get into the upper branch, Khalil Roundtree Jr., Jerry Prochaska, Alex Pereira, Magomed Ankalaev. So there's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of matchups taking place. So if I had to pick someone, it's got to be Jamahal Hill. All right, I'm going to go with Jamal Hill for Bogdan Guskov because the Volkan Ozmir rematch, I don't really want to see. And honestly, I think Volkan might be his lone kryptonite even. If not, there's always Dominic Reyes. If Dominic Reyes ends up fighting, you know, Jamal Hill, then we're just going to have to wait with Bogdan. But for now, I would love to see a Jamal Hill fight next for Bogdan Guskov. Very happy for him. As for Nikita Krylov, tough luck. Tough luck for Nikita. And all I can do is feel bad for him, man. This dude was on a three-fight winning streak. He was doing phenomenal. Had just won a co-main event against Ryan Spann. Then was called to the front line of his country. And, you know, we'll just never know. Prime Nikita Krylov, what that was like. 2025, he's been knocked out in round one in two straight bouts. That has never once happened to him, being knocked out, much less finished in back-to-back fights of this manner. He's been submitted twice before, but never of this caliber. And this is now his 11th career loss and the ninth time he's been finished. I think he needs some time off. Okay, you know, he clearly returned too quickly between April and July. He's been knocked out twice. He needs to take a few months back. And when he comes back, maybe someone like Alonzo Menifield. Maybe someone on the come up in the light heavyweight division. There's always people rising and falling in the division. And I think he could take some time off. And who knows, maybe Zhang Mingyang will be ready around that time. Maybe Johnny Walker will be coming off a win. I don't know. But I think for Nikita Krylov, taking some time off, maybe coming back early 2026 is the move. Maybe even December he could return. But he definitely needs to assess what he's going to do. And he needs to lean more on the takedowns. He's not been leading on the takedowns. He's been knocked out his last two fights. That won't cut it. But excellent win for Bogdan Guskov. Very happy he got it done. He was an underdog. Did not perform like an underdog. He performed like a favorite. After that, we got into a flyweight bout, and oh my gosh, the round two submission for Asumabayev was there. Even round one was there, but the number nine ranked Asumabayev gets past the young Jose Ochoa to win a flyweight matchup. And, you know, tail of the tape, Jose Ochoa, 26 significant strikes, 22. Jose Ochoa, 118 total strikes, 55. But it comes down to the 7 of 16 takedowns for Asu for 9.5 minutes. Jose did land one takedown for 56 seconds, but that was it. Scorecards, 30-27, 30-27, and a 29-28. Asu, in round one, lands three takedowns, gets it done in that realm. Round two actually outstrikes him significantly, 11-5, lands two takedowns of his own. Jose performed really well in round three, but the two takedowns for Asu really made the difference. This was competitive. All right, and I have to say, Jose Ochoa, Azat Maksum, both guys in the exact same career position, just unfortunately run to absolute dogs through the UFC. I mean, debut fights Loner Kavanaugh, who it's Loner Kavanaugh, Andre Lima, and then you could even say maybe Joshua Van for young up-and-coming fight. Actually, Joshua Van has caved. Joshua Van is legit, but Loner Kavanaugh, super legit. Fights Cody Durden in Atlanta, knocks him out, amazing. And then the Asumabayev fight just takes him the distance, almost submitted him twice, and defended 9 of 16 takedowns. Not too bad. For Asumabayev, this is a great bounce-back win for him. He's sitting at 5-1 in the UFC. He even admitted this wasn't his best performance, and then still decided to call out Joshua Van. So what should Asumabayev actually do next? Well, I heard Alex Pereira's and Tatsuya Taira is canceled, so we don't actually have a main event yet, but when we do our predictions for UFC Vegas 108, I believe it's going to be, we will have an official main event, so we'll talk about that. But what could Asu do next? Tatsuya Taira is maybe an option. Does have a loss to Menel Kay, but there's also Kaikar France. Kaikar France is in desperate need of a big win following his recent performance. This could be exactly what bounces him back. You could even get Amir Albazi in the mix. So I assume Mabayev will be fighting back up into the top 10. As for Jose Ochoa, I would love to see him stay in the mix. Bruno Silva, maybe loser or winner of Kaisaker and Tim Elliott. Dare I even say Steve Ursic? There's even Jiyoung Lee, you know, an upcoming the Korean Tiger. I mean, there's just so many people for Jose Ochoa to fight. I think both these guys are going to be young stars coming up. Asu is 31, Ochoa is 24, so we'll have to see where they go from here. But Asumabayev, 22-3 now, and is coming off of a big win. Next up, a middleweight action, and it brought us our fight of the night. And look, we've seen Joshua Van Braden Royval. We've seen Umar versus Merab. We have seen Volkanovski Lopez, but this fight of the night was just sloppy, brutal, bloody, just domination. And Shahrmagomedov versus Marc-Andre Barriot was phenomenal. And Shahr is back in the wing column and back to calling shots. This dude is clearly ready to keep getting bigger names. 93 significant strikes at 39. Barriot goes 2 of 6 on takedown. Somehow got 4.5 minutes of control time. Don't know where he snuck that out, but yeah, dominant stuff from Shahr. 22 significant strikes at 5 in round 1. 1, 37-29 in round 2, and then 34-5 in round number 3. There were just moments. I mean, round 1, Shara basically just distance struck him. The kicks to the body, kicks to the legs were killing him. Round 2, starts to lighten him up. Thought Bariut was going to get finished. Then Bariut, MAB, the power bar, if you want to call him by his nickname, fires back on Shara, has him hurt against the cage. I thought Shara was going to get knocked out. He's gushing blood. Then he cut Bariut on the top of his head with an elbow. Then he's wailing on him. And then you just thought both these guys were going down at some points. It was phenomenal. Shara even tried to take down. We were like, what are you doing, Shara? We thought he was going to do a guillotine at one point. This was definitely fight of the night. There wasn't even really a fight of the night up until this point. And after this, I was like, you know what? Fight of the night. Both these guys deserve it. Absolute savages. So following this, Shara Magomedov will improve to 16-1. And I do want to say, this guy has had 6 UFC fights. All right. 2 fight of the nights, 2 performance of the nights, and his 1 decision losses to MVP. Not too bad. I think Shara will definitely be back against who? I mean, there's just unlimited options. The middleweight division is endless of people he could fight. You know, Roman Kapilov, I think if you want to try and get him back in the rankings, is a fantastic matchup to do. Roman versus Shara would be phenomenal. Bruno Ferreira just fought. I would love to see that one. If you generally want to make a fight that could be a co-main event or even on a main card, Shara versus Bo Nickel. I mean, there's just fights out there people want to see. One big name, the biggest name I could potentially give him, Marvin Vettori. That's as high as I could send Shara to the number 12 or 11 guy in the rankings. But there's just so many options for him, and I'm definitely excited to see what Shara does next. As for Marc-Andre Barrieux, dude, don't judge him for being 1-4. You know, he's had a fight of the night in his last 2 wins, okay, and this loss here, a fight of the night. I mean, look, he's 1-4. It's not pretty. 1-4, he's also 35, but Bariut is just that guy. That's just what he does, and he's a veteran, and he's winning. He'd almost beat Shara, so I don't think he's going to be going anywhere. All right, I think we're going to have MAB around for a bit longer. So who are some names he could fight? Well, if Armin Petrosian's on a 3-fight losing streak, that I think would be a phenomenal matchup. You also have Rodolfo Vieira taking on Trayshawn Gore. Winner of that could be a potential option. You could even have Marco Tullio as someone. Cody Brundage is another name I'll throw out there. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of options for MAB, but I just hope they don't cut him. I don't think he deserves to be cut. There's some people on this card that definitely deserve to be cut that we mentioned. I think, you know, Buchecha will give one more shot, but Yaha, he's going. Ibo Aslan after that performance might have to go, man, to Hibas. I mean, you know, there's some guys that need to be cut. I think they need to give Marc-Andre Barrieux at least one more chance to prove himself, because dude is always in a dogfight. Following that, we dove into our co-main event, and Pyrgyan took on Marcus McGee, and you just got vintage Pyrgyan. You know, nothing special, nothing out of this world. I will say, I think the 3 rounds threw Pyrgyan off, because this fight at times was closer than it needed to be, especially when I saw the Soggy Dog and Devin Figueiredo fights, but Marcus McGee proved he can hang with the top guy, but 29-28, 29-28, 29-28, Pyrgyan wins by decision. And I think everyone was kind of surprised when they heard the 29-28s, because round 1 was really close. Marcus McGee might actually landed some more powerful-looking shots, but everyone, I think, kind of scored round 1 for Pyrgyan, like myself. Round 2, clearly Pyrgyan, don't be persuaded by the 34 significant strikes to 33. That was all Pyrgyan, and then round 3, mixed in a takedown, mixed in the striking, did what he had to do. We thought we were going to get submission from Pyrgyan. We thought he was setting it up, but he chose not to, and instead just 26 significant strikes to 8, 69 total strikes to 8, dominated him. All right, 130 total strikes to 66 in this fight. Good stuff for Pyotr No Mercy Yan. And 3-fight win streak now. He has now collected the names of the number 5, number 6, and number 12 guys in the division, and he's probably looking at a title shot. People are mentioning Sean O'Malley, which I would love, but he said he's going to wait that out. So Pyotr Yan versus the winner of Merab and Corey Sandhagen is looking to be the next fight. And by the way, that Merab and Pyotr Yan fight, if not a lot of people remember, you know, Pyotr Yan actually took down Merab, you know, and actually defended, I think it was like 30-something takedowns. So he's clearly pretty good, and he's beaten his 1-4 stretch where he lost to Aljo twice, lost to Sean, lost to Merab. Now he's on a 3-fight winning streak. I'm comfortable giving him a title shot. Maybe December, maybe January, I think, after Merab gets through Sandhagen, he's going to be eager to make a quick turnaround. For Marcus McGee, this did snap his little 6-fight winning streak, but, I mean, not too bad. It's pure freaking yawn. Following this, I don't think he should really get a higher-up shot if I'm being honest. Maybe someone like Montel Jackson is next in the cards for him. You know, names like that. I'd even throw out the name Peyton Talbot, to be honest. But McGee is clearly super tough, super weathered, and he'll definitely be back for another matchup. But, yeah, good stuff for Pidignan. I'll be excited to see who he takes on next. Professional record now of 19-5. Good stuff for No Mercy. And with that, we dove into our main event. And, man, I'll tell you guys, the fans won this one. The fans won this one. I'm so happy I picked Rainier Day Ritter. I was thinking Whitaker all week, and I finally switched to Rainier Day Ritter, and I'm like, you know what? I'm confident in RDR, and son of a gun, he got it done. And man, it sucks to say, I think Whitaker's sadly done. You know, this didn't look like no 2019, 2020, 2021 Robert Whitaker. This guy just looked kind of weathered, kind of damaged, and he ate a lot of shots, a lot of shots. So the number 13 ranked Rainier Day Ritter knocks off the number 5 Robert Whitaker and will presumably jump 8 spots in the rankings come Tuesday. One knockdown for Whitaker, 67-7 strikes, 66 in favor of Rainier Day Ritter. Both men somehow, despite Rainier Day Ritter going 192 of 228 total strikes and Whitaker going 70 of 146, have both a 46 significant strike percentage in the total fight. That's just so weird to me. I mean, really, numbers are so weird. Whitaker doesn't shoot a single takedown. Rainier Day Ritter goes 2 of 15 for 9 minutes of control time. The clinch is actually what really won it for him in the later rounds, round 4 and 5, and it turned out that the swing round was actually round 5, as everyone had it 48-47 in which ways. Whitaker, round 1 was pretty close, but I think everyone kind of realized Whitaker was landing a bit more harder shots. He takes round 1. Round 2, Whitaker doing a really good job, and then Rainier Day Ritter rallies late, actually clips Whitaker, takes him down, controls him for 2 minutes. And the tale of this entire fight, by the way, was the knees to the body from Rainier Day Ritter. The knees that put away Bo Nickel, by the way, which TKO'd him. Whitaker ate so many of them. I don't even know if we have a number for that. Landed by target, 38% to the body. Just insane. Insane, if you ask me. Do we even have this? Body shots, 26-4. And that's in terms of significant strikes, okay? Wow. Just wowza. Round 3 was going for Rainier, and then Whitaker clips him bad, knocked him down. We thought it was the highlight of the fight. Rainier somehow not only manages to survive, but take down Whitaker and control him for 2.5 minutes. Control him the rest of the round. Man, this fight was just so competitive. Round 4 turned out to be the swing round. Really turned out to be the swing round. Everyone gave round 3 to Whitaker because of the knockdown in round 4. I had it for Rainier. He didn't land a takedown, but he kept pressuring up against the cage. 14 significant strikes to 6, 37 total strikes to 8, and had 2 minutes control time. In round 5, it was all Rainier. Whitaker just looked gassed. I mean, Whitaker poured everything into after knocking him down, trying to finish him, and just couldn't get it done. But excellent win for Rainier Day Ritter. The winning streak extends to 5. He's now 4-0 in the UFC, and he's calling for a title shot. And honestly, I love a title shot. All right, but I do think middleweight's a bit crowded. Gotta be honest with you, Rainier. And there's a name of Sean Strickland or Israel Adesanya, which I think you should fight in the meantime, because the winner of Nazarene Imavov and Cal Brawl should get the number 1 title shot. The winner that should fight next for the belt. And by the way, we don't know how DDP and Hamzat's gonna go. You never know how these fights are gonna go. What if it's a 5-round split decision war and we know we have to run it back? Those are the things we don't know. So Rainier Day Ritter, title shot, Sean Strickland, Israel Adesanya. He's fighting either the champ or the top 5 guy next. Rainier Day Ritter, you are legit as ever. And, you know, Rainier Day Ritter has completely flipped the narrative. Like, talk about Pitbull, talk about Mix, talk about even Chandler, guys that have broken in and have kind of struggled. You know, Chandler's found some success, but not as much as the other. Not as much as Rainier Day Ritter, to be fair. So, Rainier Day Ritter, excellent win. And as for Robert Whitaker, you know, just tough. This stuff, you know, this is a 2-fight losing streak now for him, and he still wants to make a run. He says he can get back to a title shot, but he's going to get booted down to, dare I say, 7 in the rankings, and what should be next for him? I saw people suggesting Brendan Allen. I like that matchup. I don't know if he wants to give someone lower a shot, like Abus Magomedov, maybe. I don't really know for Whitaker. I think Brendan Allen makes the most sense. Maybe the winner of Dolidze and Hernandez in 3 weeks, but I don't know, man. Tough stuff for Robert Whitaker. I do feel somewhat bad that he lost, but as a Rainier Day Ritter fan, very happy for him. He's 21-2, and man, he was just nothing, and he's in nothing but entertaining fights, is what I'm trying to say. So, UFC Abu Dhabi, overall, not too bad. I do say there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There was like 12 fights. There were 12 fights, so I just did my 6 and 6. And we only had 4 finishes. So I do say that is a doozy, but nonetheless kind of entertaining overall. So we'll leave Abu Dhabi in the past with our 6 and 6 record, and we'll move on to UFC Vegas 108, I believe it is. We're supposed to be main evented by Amir Elbazi and Tatsuya Taira, and you'll probably hear the exact same word-for-word things I'm going to say, but instead, Amir Eduardo Cortez Acosta in heavyweight might be in the main event. He's currently ranked number 6. I don't know if him and Sergey Pavlovich are moving up. If anything, he might be fighting Derek Lewis, might be fighting Shamil Gaziev. I don't really know. Might even be fighting Talshawn Teixeira, to be fair. We'll have to see, so we'll keep everyone updated on that, and especially discuss it in our predictions episode. But elsewhere, Matheus Rebeke, Chris Duncan, that's a fire lightweight matchup. Elvis Benner, Esteban Rivovic, another fire lightweight matchup. Carol Rosa and Nora Cornole, that's a top 10 women's bantamweight matchup right there, the number 10 and the number 12. That's fantastic. Neil Magny's back to take on Elizio Zaleski dos Santos. Two unranked featherweights that are going to be ranked one day. Danny Silva versus Kevin Vallejos. Bounce back fights for Nathan Fletcher and Ringo Nakamura. Rodolfo Vieira, the BJJ Hunter, takes on the always entertaining Treshawn Gore, usually in a meme sense. Nick Klein and Andre Pulev look to break through with their first middleweight wins. Andre Lima, that's right, one of the hottest flyweight prospects, is back to take on another hot flyweight prospect in Felipe Buñez. And Pierre Rodriguez and Ketlin Souza give us a little woman's strawweight action. So good stuff there overall, and we'll be back on that later in the week. And I'll be excited to drop my SummerSlam predictions officially. Should be a very good time. But as for now, that is all I got. So, ladies and gentlemen, that'll wrap it up for episode 208. The road to 300 continues. I'm actually now able to have sponsors. People can pay for sponsorship ads on my podcast, but I don't know if anyone really listens to it. I generally don't know how to track that. I know I need to maybe start a Patreon or stuff. I don't know. Guys, I don't know what I'm doing. I need a mentor. I need a role model. We'll have to see. But for now, I will send you all on your way. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you next time on none other than the Surprise Jeb Podcast.